Corn harvest is moving into full throttle. The crop is huge, and the lead option futures contract gained 40 cents on the week. We'll ask how this can be the case today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Kansas State Extension grain analyst Mike Wolverton. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzlow of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. So tell me, why corn futures should rally the week after USDA released its biggest crop estimate ever, should it come to fruition? And in the face of a full force harvest, we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think there are several factors this week that came into play. We'll try to cover a couple of them here and let these guys talk about some of the others. But I think the biggest thing was that we saw an interest rate drop, kind of brings inflation back into the picture, dollars down at some levels, 15, 16-year lows. That makes our exports cheaper to others. China came in and talked about restricting exports from their country and encouraging imports. And we had, at the same time, buyers sitting here waiting to buy the seasonal low, which usually comes during this time of the year. And then we also had farmers delivering corn, but typically on contracts that they had sold higher prices, so not really anxious to sell. So we had a lack of buying. We had some interest in, or a lack of selling. We had some interest in buying. And that created, the volume didn't really seem to be that great from what I saw this week.
Mike Zuzlow, did he leave anything for you to comment on?
No, that guy covers it all. But it was interesting. You saw all-time highs in the crude and the euro, and you had 29-year highs in the gold, and it really does suggest the commodity sector kind of has entered that new inflationary stage, especially when they look at the emerging markets. The other thing that might be added, too, is that the biggest thing we saw this week and last week in the midst of the USDA report and the Fed was the spreads. The spreads continue to be firm for the most part. Wheat kind of got shaky there earlier this week. But the spreads and the technicals, I don't remember a time when I've seen corn, beans, and wheat all trade so technically nice at one time. The technicals are really in control at this point, and you got to wonder, is that because the fundamentals are still shaking out or are the traders a little bit nervous about just being outright long? But the spreads and the technicals have been very, very useful in the analysis lately.
Anything to add, Mike Georgie?
Not very much, but I think the inflation part is probably the most accurate of all these. You know, with the dollar being down, the demand for our exports, the idea that, you know, you want to buy something that when you drop it on your foot, it hurts because of recession possibilities. I think there's lots of money out there, and corn's cheap at this point.
I want to talk about wheat just a bit for the week before we get into the corn and soybeans. Had a high this week of $8.98. They're low on the charts at $8.39. Remember, we give you the composite trade. So that's the E-trade and the pit trade from all the sessions all week long. Settlement price 36 cents higher as a new lead option. December wheat at $8.74. July futures for next year, $6.29. They were up 41.5 cents. Wheat bounded, of course, upward this week, approaching those recent contract highs. The specs seem to have decided to get into that market. Will they top it out anytime soon?
Well, I think they're waiting for Australia. I mean, right now we don't have anybody harvesting wheat until you get into the October-November time frame. You got South America and Australia harvesting. So really, we're the only ones right now to come and buy wheat. The last 2 weeks, we've had some really good export numbers. So demand is good, and the dollar's cheap. So, I mean, I think we could head back to the highs before we go down.
Bill, Mike answered a bit of this question, but maybe we can take it up some more. Russia going to limit their barley exports, and that nation expected to do the same for wheat. The world's in need, and we have often heard wheat is sown on the planet each month of the year from our analyst. Which wheat crop is poised to fill the empty coffers first, and how does that impact the marketing decisions of U.S. farmers and the things that they're doing right now? And I guess maybe we ought to go through who's going to harvest, where most of the harvest is done around the planet. Do you know?
Well, Australia would be the next one. I mean, the South American Southern Hemisphere harvest will be the next one to come in. And, of course, they're in the midst of a drought, and they're not, as we were talking earlier, they're not a real large volume of wheat. Argentina, of course, has wheat, and they'd be coming on this fall. And those two would be your next ones to harvest. I think Mike said it best. I think the wheat, if you're going to buy wheat right now, with the situation that we've got, the United States is where you pretty much have to come. There's, you know, the European situation, but they had problems. They're using a lot of their wheat. So it looks to me like the United States is where they have to come until at least wintertime.
Mike, if you look at the numbers for wheat as they're grown around the world, most of the wheat is grown in the northern and not the southern hemisphere. We have, Australian wheat crop at about 21 million metric tons, I think, from the last USDA report. But that pales in the face of the more than 600 million metric tons that we run across the globe each and every year, 105 out of China, the 27 EU nations at 121 million metric tons, India at 74, the former Soviet Union 12 at 87.74, the United States not even a big player at, about 49 million metric tons or something along those lines. How high can wheat go, and how long? When does rationing really take place on this kind of crop that's used for human consumption?
I think the end users that we've talked to on a global scale would say they are rationing in that they're buying extra right now, Todd. They were worried about the Russian export restrictions if we got above $220 a metric ton. They're worried about Argentina limiting their exports. They're worried now about Australia limiting their exports. And so buyers have ended up buying both Australian and U.S. wheat in case the Australians don't come through, or buying both Argentine and U.S. wheat in case the Argentines don't come through. So there is some rationing in the form that they're buying ahead, and they're covering themselves so they don't get trapped like they did 3 or 4 months ago. But clearly, when Kansas starts to roll, it'll be the same time that a lot of China starts to roll. It'll be the same time a lot of France starts to roll. That's probably your most important time period. And the only way we can look at that is to see how the spreads act and see how the July wheat acts based upon the weather pattern. It's going to be very tricky here, and that's why I think the scale-up sell approach of small increments is probably the best way to go here for the next 30 days.
Mike, how far along are we on the U.S. Exports for wheat compared to normal? I think we'd be at about 46%. Where are we at this point, and what does that mean?
We're at 70% right now, and I mean, it means that there's a good demand out there. But I think you have to not expect wheat for next summer to be at $9 or $10 because we have the potential to plant more wheat. I know producers are having a hard time finding wheat to sow. The European Union is going to probably they had a 10% set aside, but now they're going to limit it to 0% set aside. So there's a lot more acres for wheat. And coming into next year, we may solve this problem just like we did with the corn.
How does it?
Yeah, and I could just like to add too, maybe play the devil's advocate a little bit. If you look at the world global ending stocks to use, we're looking at about 18% on the last report. So it's not like we're out of wheat. I mean, they're saying that we have a tight supply, but not that we're going to be completely out and we have to ration a huge amount of usage.
Mike, how does it all play into what's been happening with the grains and the oil seeds, in particular with corn, which seems to me that wheat certainly has had to be one of the driving forces to bring corn as far back up as it's gone.
We saw that early in the week when the short corn holders of the wheat corn spread said, hey, this is enough. The technicals have taken us above 353. We're now dancing on 359, 360. This is enough. We've got some compound bottoms by some of these chartists that are projecting prices near or maybe just over $4 in December futures. And I think the folks, again, like we said earlier, that they're really looking at the technicals sharply here, and they don't want to be part of a short corn spread now, whether it's beans corn or wheat corn. So, yeah, finally, the price of the feed grain and wheat has finally caught up in the corn in both the trader's psychology and when it comes to how much the USDA did raise the demand for corn in the last report while they took down some of the demand in the wheat as well.
New corn December contract is the new lead option this week. It had a high of 377, the low at 344 and a quarter. On the lead option chart, gained 40 cents at 376 and a half. Remember, that's a September to a December spread. December futures for 08 at $4.21 and a quarter. They were up 21 and a half cents from last week. Soybeans, November, a 996 and three quarters top, low at 952 and three quarters. It's a new lead option as well. 979 up 38 cents. November next year at 942 and a half, up 17 and a half cents. In the oats at 283 and a quarter, we're up 27 and a quarter from last week. We're in the face now of a really big corn harvest, Bill Mayer. Guys are bringing in much more corn than they expected, not only in Illinois, but also in Iowa, as the early reports are coming in from there. What do they do with these extra bushels that they hadn't expected and haven't marketed at this point?
Well, that was one of the things we're working with people this week some. If you're sitting there and you thought you were 50% sold, but it turns out you're really only 35% sold, and you get an opportunity like we've seen in the last couple of days, I think it's worthwhile to look that over and see if you need to get some additional bushels sold and or look at additional bushels that you're going to be storing and see whether you want to get some floors maybe underneath those. I think we have to step back and look at this thing in perspective. We're still fairly early into this harvest. The harvest up to this point really hasn't created any big problems, but it's not going to. It's going to be the last 25% that creates a stress on the system, I believe. So I think that you have to prepare and take advantage of the opportunities we've had here.
How does China's announcements during the week change your view, Mike, on, if it does at all, on corn and soybeans?
Yeah, it does. And I think, combining what Bill just said, I think the Chinese news, if you factor that in, does the Chinese news now make the global corn market a lot like the global wheat market has been, where we become the primary source for corn in the next 6 to 7 months until midsummer next year? And I think that's where it goes back to guys that have on-farm storage. I think the basis is very much up in the air because you can make an argument that the crop is getting bigger. The trade is expecting a bigger crop in October. Some have said 5 bushels on the yield by the time it's all said and done. So how do you do that when you're trading 380 corn and you're getting good yields? I think our answer, Todd, is with this new Chinese news is get a basic floor underneath you and do it in the form of bought puts, either D's puts or March puts. They're getting very economical. They're very good floors at this point, especially this late in the day.
And what do you think the upside potential in the corn market might be? And maybe we ought to get that answer from everybody.
Well, like I said, I can see where some of these compound bottom analysts in the technicals are saying that it's heading up towards the 417, 427 level. I don't know if I buy that. I think you got to have USDA support on that in the October report.
I have a hard time trying to find out where the top is. I guess you could say it was going to be 430 where the old top was. But, I think it still depends on inflation, what type of money keeps flowing into this, and there again, too, if you can hedge it out into March, there's enough carry to hedge it. And, like we've been saying all year, have your storage ready so you're going to store it and hopefully get a better basis.
I would think that 395 on December futures would be the technical objective at this point. But I'm not going to say that the 325 December futures isn't still a possibility. I have a hard time believing that this big crop that we are harvesting won't eventually catch up with us and stress the system a little bit too much.
From the Mercantile Exchange this week, October live cattle, a high of 96.75. They're low at 94.52 and one half. A settlement price up 145 at 96.70 for the October live cattle. October feeder cattle at 116.20. We're down 62 and a half. October lean hogs, 66.25 for their high, the low at 62.25. Their settlement price at 61.35 was down $4.20. USDA on Friday released released their latest cattle on feed report, 94% on feed as of September the 1st, placed in August at 93, and marketed in August at 100%. Mike Zuzolo, your reaction to that report and how it might trade out on Monday?
Don't want to take up a lot of time. I love the livestock people that are listeners, but it was a pretty neutral report, Todd.
And we will move on very quickly because we don't want to take up a lot of time with the livestock, and we'll move to the grains again when we talk with Mike Wolverton in 2 minutes. He's with Kansas State.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Harvest activities continued in full swing this week as ideal weather conditions held over the region. The mercury reached 90 across many sections of Illinois this week as strong southerly winds maintained the flow of warm air. Fortunately, dew points remained generally in the upper 50s and low 60s, so the warm weather was comfortable and not oppressive. Rainfall this week was confined to a few widely scattered showers along and just ahead of a weak cold front that bisected central Illinois Wednesday and Thursday. The rain was locally heavy in a few locations as what showers did develop moved very slowly. After a summer-like weekend, it's likely that the chances for showers and thunderstorms will increase beginning Monday as Gulf moisture streams northward and interacts with an advancing cold front. Showers and thunderstorms are likely into early Tuesday across the southern half of Illinois. After that, cooler, drier air will spill into Illinois and return temperatures to more normal levels for the remainder of the week. The weather should begin to warm up again by next weekend as the high moves to the east coast and strong southerly winds set up again across the Midwest. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Commodity Week on WILL AM 580. Our panelists in studio this week are Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Manager Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Our guest is Mike Wolverton this week of Kansas State University. He's an extension grain analyst. Mike Wolverton received his PhD from the University of Missouri, and after serving on the faculties of The Ohio State University and Arizona State University, he became the Continental Grain Professor of Agribusiness at the American Graduate School of International Management, where he is now an emeritus. Wolverton is currently professor and extension specialist at Kansas State with responsibilities that include grain marketing and a little bit of policy. Good afternoon to you, Mike. We appreciate you being with us.
Good to be here.
I'd like to weave a couple things together so we can get a picture from you of how you feel about the Fed's recent actions to bolster the U.S. economy and meld that with China's inflation fears and what they've done this week and their apparent need to purchase grain and potentially oil seeds.
Well, when the Fed dropped the interest rate, they really set off sort of a ripple effect. It did sort of help the confidence, at least the financial community, but it also caused the dollar to drop against other currencies, which stimulated export demand for our commodities. And I think the Chinese might have reacted to that, thinking that corn especially would be in short supply along with wheat, and close down their exports of corn, which will, as was said earlier in the earlier part of the program, will stimulate more U.S. exports. And so this is kind of a ripple effect, I think, that will play out over the next few months.
Mike, I've got a question on the ethanol side of things. If I had a plant ready to open today, would I open it, and how do the margins look as you look forward on the ethanol plants?
Well, ethanol profit margins have gone negative. They've been negative for the past week or 10 days. And if you had a brand new plant to open today, you probably would not open it because it'd be better to keep it idle, I think, rather than to generate red ink. And we're going to have to look at these other plants. When you folks talk about corn prices above $4, you're really looking at choking off the demand from ethanol plants. In the latest USDA report, they dropped the corn usage to make ethanol by 100 million bushels, and ethanol plant managers are simply cutting back on use of their capacity, and they're slowing down the construction of new plants. They're coming online at a much slower pace, and I think that the industry is really reacting to these high corn prices. It's not just high corn price. Ethanol price has fallen to very low levels compared to what they were before, and it's just put a tremendous squeeze on ethanol profit margins.
Mike, I've read and been told by people in the ethanol industry that the refiners, in a big general context, that some refiners have been in a point where they've met their mandate by the government. They're not going to go ahead and blend ethanol because of transportation logistics. Is it that, or is it just the profit margins are just so good because unleaded's so high they don't want to waste their time blending ethanol that they don't have to do based upon the government mandate?
Well, what has happened is with all these new plants coming online, we've reached the capacity of the mandate, and we're going beyond that now. Ethanol inventories are starting to build. And so what we're looking at is a marketplace that is moving from ethanol as an additive to gasoline to replace MTBE to a point where ethanol has to compete head-on-head with gasoline. And so when you look at that, ethanol price will have to fall to about $1.40 per gallon to compete against gasoline. And I'm afraid that's going to put some of these ethanol plants in real deep red ink.
Going with the other soy oil for soy diesel, what do you feel about that? A lot of people felt that these bean prices were going up because of demand for that. I mean, it looks like with these bean prices, that's kind of in the red too as well.
It is in a red. I've done the numbers on biodiesel plants, and you simply can't without the $1 per gallon of federal subsidies, they simply do not pencil out. We have two things that are affecting the soybean price right now. One is looking at a very short carryover, and given the early harvest reports, we may see the USDA drop the yield estimate a little bit more, which will make that carryover even smaller. And then we've seen quite a bit of soybean oil go into biodiesel production. There would be more. If there were more soybean oil available, we'd make more biodiesel. But right now, with the capacity online, they're only utilizing about 43% of their capacity in the U.S. It's simply because we're short of vegetable oil to convert into biodiesel.
Coming back to wheat now, can you tell me a little bit about acreage in Kansas and other places that you might be taking a look at, what you think might be done about sowing wheat acres this fall, and how many extra acres the high price could put in the ground?
I think we're going to see a very strong response on the part of producers to these market signals, being the high price of wheat. And I think all around the northern hemisphere, we're going to see an expansion of wheat acreage. I'm not so sure that producers in Kansas are going to expand wheat acres too much. They planted 10 million acres last year, and I don't think they're going to increase it too much more this year. But we have to keep in mind that if wheat acreage does expand in the United States and wheat prices fall, as many people are forecasting, there's the option then of replanting those wheat acres to row crops in the spring if corn and soybean prices remain high.
If the CRP, if they had any kind of a release of acres on the CRP, do you see much of that coming out and going into production out in the Kansas area?
I think there will be some. Just the normal land coming out of contracts are expiring, will release about 1 million acres, according to the estimates I've been seeing. The USDA's talked a little bit about an early release of some acreage, but I really don't think that's going to happen. I think the political realities there will just prevent that. But we're going to see about 1 million acres come back into production, and Texas, Kansas, or some of the states that have the most CRP, And so, yes, I think some of this land that comes out of CRP in Kansas will go to wheat, yes.
I'd be interested on the biofuels area again to get your view as somebody outside of the primary corn-producing regions of basis across the Midwest, how it's reacted in Illinois in particular for corn, and whether that was an expectation that you might have had that the basis would really widen in Illinois as opposed to everybody lifting up and being closer to the actual futures price?
You know, we thought that the basis would widen this fall as we got into harvest because we knew we were having a bigger crop. But I don't think anyone foresaw the strength with which that basis has widened. But we've run into transportation difficulties. We've got problems with storage. And we're just seeing some really wide basis. And I think that's just the market telling people that need to build more on-farm storage and store it now and sell it later. But that's occurring all across the wherever we're harvesting. We're running into basis difficulties right now.
Do you have target predictions for soybean, corn, and wheat at this time?
You mean price predictions?
Yes.
I really don't. I fully expected wheat prices to start to decline somewhat because we're planting wheat out here now. I think probably by mid-October when we get a better feel for how many acres of wheat will be planted around the northern hemisphere, we may see wheat prices start to fade. I really did not expect to see corn prices go up as they did the latter part of this week, but China's announcement, the decrease in value of the dollar, everything is pointing to higher corn prices.
How do you view wheat in the European Union? I think they use it to make ethanol part of the time, and they use a lot more biodiesel than we do as well.
That's true, and the high price of wheat is really causing some difficulties on ethanol production there, and they've cut back a little bit on biodiesel production simply because they're short of vegetable oil as well. I think that's when the European Union released their set-aside acres, I think that was part of the reaction to the need for more wheat and more canola, rapeseed oil in Europe.
And finally, what kind of risk management tools do you suggest wheat producers, and I know you deal probably with hard red winter wheat, but wheat producers employ this fall as they put the crop in?
I'm encouraging producers to use forward contracting, cash forward contracts where they can, use futures and options if they understand those instruments well enough. We simply have some of the highest prices these producers have ever seen in their lifetime, and it'd be a shame to miss out on the opportunity to lock some of those prices in.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Good to be here.
Mike Wolverton is a Kansas State Extension Grain Analyst. He joins us from Kansas State University. Now, a final word from our panelist in studio, and we'll start with you, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing.
Well, we've gotten a good early start on this harvest. It's a big one. Pace yourself, take your time, and we got good prices, good yields. Take your time and enjoy it.
And Mike Zuzalo?
I think probably the best thing that we can provide right now to producers is the rationale for the investors buying commodities the past 6 years is no longer the case. It was founded upon strong demand and development in the world in the emerging markets. It was also in an environment of low global inflation and low global interest rates. The last 2 weeks we've seen that has not been the case. It is more of an emerging market inflation, buying spree, and as Mike said, hard assets. And I think we in the ag sector need to see that and get some floors underneath our prices here.
And Mike Georgian of Allendale.
Well, I think that's right. I think as you're going down a field and you're seeing prices go up, you still need to realize that they could fall just as easy. Beans chart is in a pretty steep uptrend, and it's going to fall, so be ready.
Thank you very much to the three of you, Mike Georgie of Allendale and Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities, along with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
This is Dan Simeone, local host of Morning Edition, willpledge.org. Bookmark it.